It's the weekend, which means it's time for Jill on Money, the show that makes money fun and just happens to answer all your financial questions. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
All right, it's hour number two of Jill on Money. Did you miss any part of hour number one? Are you just tuning in right this second? I've got great news for you. You don't have to just say, oh no, I missed it. You didn't miss anything. I mean, you did miss it because it sounds better like in that first moment. But if you did miss any part of the show, just go to our website, jillonmoney.com, and click on the radio tab, because that will bring you to the episode. And you'll find some past episodes kind of fun. All right? And if you just can't get enough of Jill and Mark, check out the podcast, Better Off. You can get it on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, anywhere else you find your favorite podcasts. Okay, we've got a really interesting guest today. First of all, she's got a number of consonants in her last name, so that's exciting. Terry Shodine.
Perfect. Thank you, Jill.
Just because you told me how to pronounce it.
Right. Well, we're a team.
Yeah. Shodine. Got it. Terry Shodine has written a book called Scrappy, a little book about choosing to play big. So before we get into the book, just tell us about yourself. So you're from Southern California.
Yeah, born and raised in Southern California.
Yeah, then what happened?
Through high school and into college, I fell in love with speech and debate, and I was a speech comm major. And initially, I thought I was going to go to law school, but then my parents were like, well, how are you going to pay for that? So I took my very first sales job, and I went to work for a company that promoted national speakers and sales trainers. And there's this really fun, inspiring moment where I thought, wow, that's really what I'd like to do. I'd love to teach public speaking and persuasive presentation skills to executives. So launched into my own company in 1990, and now, gosh,
almost never looked back.
Never looked back 20 some odd years later.
What's the best money decision that you've made in your life?
I think the moment that I decided to be an entrepreneur, to go off on my own and to, you know, kind of be in charge of my own destiny.
We hear that a lot. You know, we hear a lot of people say, I'm an entrepreneur, or I want to be an entrepreneur. But what did you do to prepare yourself financially to do that? Because, I mean, it's one thing to say what you want. It's another thing to say, you know, did you make a plan? Did you say, I got to get a bunch of money saved? Did you plow through your retirement savings? I hope you didn't. But
no,
but what was the game plan there?
No, it was with, you know, real conscious effort. I took the time to read a lot of books, but I went to work with two different sales training and development companies, not only as a producer, but as a manager. And I think that when you work with another company before you launch off and create a similar kind of company, it gives you that street smarts and a little bit of savvy at someone else's expense before you take off and do it on your own.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of an interesting thing because you hear some stories about, like, you know, become an entrepreneur and, you know, sell everything. And it, I don't think that most people can do that. I think that most of the people who are listening to this might have an idea about, I have something I think I'd like to do, but I'm a little nervous. Or they're at a point in their lives where, you know, they do have a lot to lose.
Sure.
Right? You know, I'm married, I have a family, I contribute to the household income. So that's all part of the idea of, like, how you can, I think, maybe push yourself forward, but do it with a little bit of a safety net.
Absolutely. I think it's critical to go to work within an organization that does something similar before you launch on your own. But there are difficult times. And I will confess to you that in one of those challenging periods, I literally picked up a job working nights as a waitress. And I would sometimes use my tip money to help pay for my assistant. I mean, it was brutal hours. I remember working like 7 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock at night on my business. I was going to graduate school at night on Tuesday nights and Thursday nights. I was waiting tables Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays. And, you know, you got to be scrappy. You got to really get in the game and work hard and play tough and use all your resources at your disposal.
How coincidental that you should use the word scrappy when that is the title of your book. Why don't you describe or define scrappy? How do you see that? And how do you differentiate that from, say, having moxie or being ambitious?
Right. So So scrappy is defined as being full of fighting spirit, and it is synonymous with having moxie, being spirited. I consider it a bit rebellious, and I think that there's a mindset as well as a strategy that you have to put into play when you're executing a scrappy idea. And when you put that combination together and you do it cumulatively over time, it creates incredible results.
So you have, in this book, you have a number of different kind of a procedure to sort of bringing scrappiness into your life. But does somebody have to be programmed to be scrappy, or can there be a prescriptive effort to become scrappy?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a great question. I think there's an awakening. I think we all have a scrappy spirit inside of us, and I think you kind of want to tap into it. And I don't recall the very first time I heard the word scrappy, but I do remember watching that movie Wall Street, where Bud Fox is trying to capture the attention of Gordon Gekko, and he cold calls his office for 59 days in a row, and nothing happens. And then he decides, you know what, I'm going to get a little bit scrappy. And he doesn't use that word, but that's the essence. So he starts schmoozing the assistant. He finds out when Gordon Gekko's birthday is. He finds out what his favorite cigar is. And he creates this beautiful plan to pop into Gordon Gekko's office on his birthday, deliver these cigars, and gets his shot. And while he got the shot, I got the lesson. And I thought, oh my gosh, why am I not doing something like that?
This may be the first time ever, the first lesson ever, by the way, from the movie Wall Street, that does not, you know, by the way, of course, that doesn't end, the whole thing doesn't end very well for poor little Bud.
But, it doesn't.
But that said, it like so many other things, and this is whether you're starting your own business, but you're saying that, like, you could actually bring a scrappy spirit to kind of advance yourself. I think a lot of people who are listening to this, they might say, you know, I don't know if I'm really an entrepreneur, but I do want to get ahead, or I want to infuse myself with something new here, you know, at this point in my life, in my career. And so what is it about a specific goal that's so important about that? I mean, can I just sort of say, like, I want to eat healthier instead of saying I have to weigh a certain amount of money?
No, I think
A certain amount of money. weigh a certain amount.
I think that there, you know, in all the people that I interviewed for the book, there were, you know, certain benchmarks that inspired somebody to be scrappy. And there's usually some sort of catalyst. Maybe they're feeling boxed in. Maybe they're stuck. Maybe they want to get a new career. Maybe they're just looking for a dramatic change. Or maybe they were just bored. But I liken it to a bit of sand in the bed of an oyster. Without that irritation, it creates no pearl. And so if you're at that place where you're like, I'm ready to create some change, I'm ready to play bigger, that's when a scrappy strategy really might be effective. I don't think you're going to get scrappy every day. I think that it's a go-to play when you're feeling like, all right, now I've really got to make something happen to stand out.
All right, we'll get back to our interview with Terry Shodin. If you've got a financial question, just give us a holler, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com, and we'll be right back.
Annuities, IRAs, 401ks, she covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. And you may notice that this year we've spent a little bit more time talking about some of your career stuff. It's because I have become increasingly convinced that we just spend a ton of time talking about our investments, your capital, but we don't talk as much about your human capital as we should be. And so that's why we've got our guest today, Terry Shodin. She's written a book called Scrappy, a little book about choosing to play big. And, you know, in my mind, this is what you can be doing to not just increase your happiness at work, but also how you're going to increase your value at work I think that this is interesting because you did a lot in sales presentation. So I come from a trading, but then a sales background. And mm-hmm. I feel like with salespeople who get a bad rap in this world, I have to say, that you really learn to be scrappy to differentiate yourself. Does that work also in an organization? I mean, I don't want to be like, oh, you should pit yourself against your cubicle mate. But, you know, if I'm working really hard, how do I get someone to take notice of me in this big organization? A lot of people working for big companies. So how do they do it?
Right. And I like to say that I think we should keep it classy and scrappy. But I like to use scrappy strategies in order to earn the right to be heard. And I think that everybody sells something, whether it's a product, a service, a philosophy, an idea. Most importantly, when you're selling yourself on a job interview or for a promotion, everybody sells something. And we're all trying to separate ourselves from this sea of sameness. So it doesn't have to be a big overt gesture. I don't think that you need to be disruptive for the sake of being disruptive. I think that you can do little things that make people sit up a little bit and go, oh, you know what? That just made me take notice. I'm curious now. And if a scrappy strategy can create intrigue on the front end, it earns you an opportunity to be heard. It could be in the middle. Maybe you're working on a deal and it's stuck in purgatory. And you're like, how do I loosen this thing
right? Up how do I so get it restarted?
Right. And so maybe you're going to employ a scrappy strategy to loosen things up and get it rolling again. Or it could be a scrappy play after the fact. You know, maybe you've just done your best play and it's crickets, like you haven't heard anything, right? And so you're like, all right, what kind of little scrappy thing can I do to reignite that conversation or put the cherry on top just as a finishing touch after you've made your best play?
So give me an example of that. So, you know, we have let's say that your goal is, it could be to close a deal or it could be to get a promotion. And you also talk about how you've got to have a mentor and build some team members to that. But let's talk about like the kinds of things that people can do to really boost that. And you break it up into small, medium, and large efforts. So give me some examples of like a small thing you can do to maybe get noticed.
All right. So let's do an after the fact play, right?
Okay.
So there was a gentleman who was interviewing for a position with a very high profile television organization. And he'd gone through several rounds of interviews and it had come down to, he knew it was down to him and one other candidate. He completes his interview. And while they were doing the little small chat, the gal that he had been meeting with had these gorgeous orchids in her office. So he compliments her on the orchids and they get into this conversation about how they're so hardy and, you know, you can't really kill them. And
oh, I can.
Anyway, so he leaves that interview and he thinks to himself, you know, as I'm going to send this follow-up note, I don't want to do anything crazy, but he just included a beautiful orchid bouquet. It was like a plant. And he included that with this thank you note. And, you know, it's those little tiny things where you're listening in the meeting and you use it as a finishing touch that make people go, oh, they paid attention, right? And I think it's not about the gift. I think it's about what does the gift say? And the gift says, I was listening, I'm paying attention, and I really want you to understand how much I want this opportunity, and I'm looking forward to making things happen.
I think that that's, I mean, I think that's really important because I think the listening part, not doing something by rote, is really interesting to me as well. And I think that, I mean, I just even think when you're writing a thank you note or, you know what happened recently to me? I wrote a condolence note. I know that sounds crazy. So it wasn't like a, I wasn't trying to be scrappy here, but I wrote a condolence note because I read the obituary of a friend's father, and I read something in the obituary that struck me, and I just happened to write about that particular thing. Like, I was reading in the obituary this thing about your dad, and she came back to me and said, like, that was so meaningful that, like, you actually referenced something that was so personal to me.
Absolutely. And it's so spot on, Jill, and here's why. Everybody's moving so fast. Right. Everything's about, oh, the tweet and the Facebook post and the Instagram image and what you can really do different to differentiate is to slow down and to pay attention and to comment on those small nuances with a handwritten note. It's like, wait, what? It's amazing how that little special attention really shifts the game.
So I don't know your boyfriend.
Yes.
But I've already won him over,
yes,
evidently.
You have.
Because
the geologist.
Yes. I never took geology, so I'm just going to tell you the reason I think I've won him over is because I'm a little bit of a math head.
Yes, the math geologist.
So we're talking to Terry Shodin, the author of Scrappy, and on page 145, you know, this is how I read books. Poor publishers who send them to me. I read books, I dog-ear them, I write them.
I love how much you've dog-eared that book.
You know, I go crazy, right? So here we are on page 144. What is circled? See that?
Stay true to your brand and personality. Yes.
I think this is very hard. And I think this is very hard for people to do. We'll get to your boyfriend in a second.
Okay.
Because it requires you to really understand who you are and then stay true to that, even when you are maybe lured into a different direction. And it also may require you to say no sometimes.
You know, when we initially start speaking with people about the idea of getting scrappy, the first thing they'll think of is, you know, all of the crazy illustrations, right? And they'll say, oh, that's an amazing idea, but I would never do that. And I think that's a great place to start. I think that getting scrappy lives on a continuum. And, you know, you might want to do something more conservative and classy and understated because that's your brand, that's your personality, that's your style. Or you might want to do something really aggressive, overt and over the top. And that's okay if that's your brand. That's not my brand, but it is the brand of others. And I liken it to this, like Taylor Swift is a huge brand. She's scrappy in her own way. But Lady Gaga is also a huge brand, and she's scrappy in a different way. And Lady Gaga is not going to do what Taylor Swift would do, and vice versa. And nor should we, right?
So, I like those two. That might be the only time those two names will ever be brought up in this, but thank you very much. So on page 145, there's a picture of a pendulum, which I have marked up. And so when Terry first came into the studio and I was showing, I said, oh, I love this illustration. It was the first thing I said to you.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God, my boyfriend is going to be so happy. She took a picture of it. So notice, by the way, that and what's interesting is that there is this, so it's a range of what you can do. Classy, bold, high risk, conservative, edgy, subtle, low risk, radical. You could use some, all, different combinations at different points in your life. So let's talk a little bit about why you think that there are mistakes made in people who are trying to do this. And they may not even say that I'm trying to be scrappy. These are just plain old mistakes that people will make. They
push too hard.
They push too hard. Or I'm going to give you like my example of that, which is I cannot stand when people just ask me for stuff just out of the blue.
Right.
And it happened recently where someone's like, oh, can you get my friends da 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 da, like 14th Connection, in the door at CBS News for a summer internship. And I basically said, no, I can't. But that makes me insane. What is that? So the balance between asking for something which you're being told to do and networking and then overreaching.
Right. So first rule of thumb, I believe, is that we're using scrappy strategies in order to earn the right to be heard. So I don't think just coming out boldly and asking for something is an appropriate strategy. I think that what you're looking for and what makes a scrappy effort valuable is when you can come up with a clever workaround to create an opportunity where maybe one doesn't exist. Now, in that vein, again, there are always people that do beautifully, and then there's people that just take it way too far.
All right, it's Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. When we return, more of our conversation with Terry Shodin. We'll be right back.
Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Want to get in touch? Call or email any day, anytime. 855-411-JILL or ask Jill at jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. How about shooting us an email? askjill@jillonmoney.com. We're talking to Terry Shodin. She is the author of the new book called Scrappy. And, you know, there's a fine line between promoting yourself and being a nudge. Where is that line, Terry?
When I say this, look, I want you to be promoting. I want you to be outgoing. I want you to make an effort. However, there is a point of no return. And that's where you're doing your homework, doing your research turns into almost like creepy stalking. So what I always say to someone is like, don't scare the bunny, right? We don't want to scare the bunny. We want to create a welcoming environment where they're like, wow, I genuinely want to get to know you and meet with you. But if you push too hard, and I'll give you an example. There was a gal who was trying to get the business of Tony Ko, who's the CEO and founder of NYX, NYX Cosmetics, which, you know, is huge. So this gal kept coming after Tony, And initially, Tony really appreciated her effort. She's like, wow, you know, this gal's, you know, scrappy. She's creative. I like it. Unfortunately, her proposal is not going to work for my company. So she graciously said no, not once, but twice. Then again, a third time. Now, this gal kept coming at her and actually found out that Tony had a dog, and she actually sent dog treats. And it completely freaked Tony out. And reasonably so. So the woman did not know how to take no, and she kept coming at her. And so there's a point where no really means no. And I think that you have to gracefully exit when a person has said no and move on to another target.
Right. And like, that's okay. I think that there's some, the part of this, I really want to get to this before we wrap up, which is, you write, sometimes a good idea can go bad when the timing is off. And that may not be your fault. It could just be bad timing.
Right.
Right. I've reached out to you not recognizing there was something huge going on in your life. And I think that sometimes we forget that as we're going through and trying to create magic. Right.
Sure.
You know, you go and like you ask your boss for a raise and you're like, oh, my God, the boss is like, oh, my boss just told me I had to cut 20% of my staff. So
sure.
All those things can happen. But I love this idea about you saying conduct a pre-mortem to anticipate possible failures. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So a postmortem really doesn't help the dead guy, right? So a premortem says, let's take action, but before we do, let's look at all of the possible outcomes. And here's the nugget. I want you to think ahead like a master chess player. Think 2, 3, 4 moves ahead. How will this play out? What are the positive outcomes? And if there's technically there's 3. 1, it fails miserably, so you pull out. 2, it just flatlines. Nothing happens. And 3 is that you actually get what you want to have happen. And then it goes back to time. Don't expect an immediate result. Sometimes things do happen right away. Sometimes it takes a couple weeks, sometimes a couple months. And you and I both know if you're in it for the long game, sometimes things take a couple years. But the beauty of a scrappy strategy is that if you just stay with small, scrappy efforts consistently over time, that cumulative effect is what really creates tremendous outcomes.
I love that. Also, can you talk a little bit about failure? And I think you put a statistic in here, which actually seemed low to me, that 60% of like ideas fail. I would presume it would be like 80%, but let's say it's 60. But more than half of the ideas that people have or goals they set, they're just not going to reach that. So what, right?
So what, right? I mean, I don't know that what difference does it make what the odds are at the end of the day, right? If you're following your passion, you're following your goal. I mean, you're here to be that unique element in that percentage that actually makes it happen. So 1 failure, 2 failures, 3 failures, you know, again, morph your plan, right?
Yeah, but you know what's weird about that? Like, I mean, so again, you come from a sales world and maybe because my first job on Wall Street was as a trader where there's trades fail.
Right.
Right?
You're,
you know, like, not everything's going to work, but you write that failure is often just the beginning. While crashing and burning is always a possibility, it's in the recovery that we grow and improve. So that, I think, is important, that you are going to mess up. You got to take something away from it. So is there any value in your mind to doing a postmortem to kind of figure out, like, what did I do wrong there? Yeah, right?
Right. I just want to, look, I say let's hedge our bets. So if we do a premortem, then we can avoid as many failures as possible. That doesn't mean that they're still not going to happen. And then, of course, if something doesn't work out the way that you anticipated, then you review, you analyze, and you shift your course. But you want to always stay on course. And again, if you're looking at the long game, we use scrappy strategies at varying points on our journey. But if you're looking at the long game, what you'll ultimately find out is that people will say, oh my gosh, I remember when you did this 5 years ago, it stuck in my mind. And you can use that as part of the recovery or as part of your way that you shift or that you show, bottom line, staying power.
Yeah.
And that staying
still
power is
it.
A game changer.
Yeah, that is it's a great point. I also love the idea about curveballs and serendipity. That you write that, you know, when your plan doesn't go exactly as planned, that's not necessarily a bad thing, right?
No. I mean, one of my favorite stories in the book is Steven Varela. He was really working towards getting a job with this company. He made a huge play to capture the attention of a CEO. And that CEO was like, wow, this is an amazing effort. I don't have an opportunity for this kid right now, but you know what? I have a colleague in a different company. So he reached out to Steven and said, look, I don't have an opportunity for you, but I'm so impressed with your resume and what you did that I'd like to pass it on to my colleague. And Steven's like, absolutely, I would love that. Steven interviews with this other organization, lands the job, gets his dream job that he didn't even know existed. And so, you know, I really believe that when you execute a scrappy strategy, it can launch this element of serendipity, and you could end up in circumstances that are absolutely amazing that you couldn't have possibly predicted because you were in the game, you showed up, you made your play, and cool things happen.
I love this. Okay, last question. You ready? Terry Shodine, author of Scrappy, a little book about choosing to play big with the big boxing gloves on it. You boxer?
No.
All right,
no.
Just checking. What is the... So we started with, you know, the best money decision you made or career decision, but let's talk about the worst money or a career mistake, either one, money or career mistake that you made and what you might do differently.
Oh, gosh. You know, there. I had an assistant... that I needed to let go a lot sooner. And I didn't have the time, the patience, or the bandwidth at that time to kind of let her go. And it ended up hurting me in the long run. So I wish that I had let her go sooner and made an effort to replace her, because I think it cost me not only a lot of time and money, but maybe even some opportunities, because I just didn't, you know, there's a whole list of reasons why.
Yeah, but that's like when you don't break up with a significant other, is that you're in the middle of it and you're like, oh, I can't deal with this right now. A lot of people will do that, right? Or,
yeah.
Or they'll have a colleague or, you know, in work situations
let
where.
Him go.
Right, let them go.
I always say, don't stay at the party too long.
You're listening to Jill on Money. This is the show that takes the mystery out of your finances. I want to thank Terry Shodine, author of Scrappy, for joining us. If you've got a question for Terry, we're happy to pass it along to her. It's always easy to do. Just shoot us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. When we return, more of your questions. We'll be right back.
It doesn't matter if you're 25 or 65, Jill Schlesinger is here to help you. Back to Jill on Money.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, just give us a holler. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. Mark would love to hear from you. He does. He loves you. Leave details, he's saying to me, including a number where we might be able to call you back. No drunk dialing to the Jill on Money show. Although we got a couple of drunk tweets, didn't we? Was that a tweet? Where did we get that? No, I think they were emails. We got someone who sent us a funny series of emails who was definitely drunk. And what time did those come in? Like at midnight, I think. From, I'm not going to say, but so in the West. I don't want to damn anybody. Anyway, we thought that was humorous, but that said, if you can't get enough of this show or you've missed any part of the show, go on to our website, jillonmoney.com. Jillonmoney.com, you can listen to the past couple of shows, and if you've missed any part of this one, you can catch up. So definitely do that. And check out our podcast. It's called Better Off. Better Off. And you can get it anywhere you get your podcasts. If you don't listen to podcasts, let me just say right now that you're missing something. I am a podcast-aholic. I really am. I have a problem. And I listen to all different kinds. I mean, I listen to news programs. I listen to money programs. I listen to comedy sometimes, just general interest stuff. I love it. You can get the Better Off podcast at the iTunes Store, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, anywhere else that you find podcasts. And again, if you haven't done it before, it's really easy. I mean, you can literally just go, if you're an iTunes person, go to iTunes. There's a little podcast icon on your phone. And just search for Better Off with Jill Schlesinger, and you'll get the podcast. And then you can listen to it. Listen, my mother, who's in her late 70s, is listening. So... You can do it. All right. Good. All right, let me do an email right now. This is from Jeannie, who says, I really enjoy your show. I appreciate the tips. My question is regarding a thrift savings plan. I know everyone says to keep money in a TSP because plan costs are low. Now, the thrift savings plan is the federal government plan. So just so you know, that's what she's referring to. She says the costs are low, but I'm considering moving my money. I have about $750,000 in a thrift savings plan, of which $150,000 is in a Roth TSP. And TSP requires us to take money out at a proportional rate, so I can't allow my Roth money to grow once I need to start withdrawing. I wonder what you think about rolling the whole amount into Vanguard or something similar, at which point I will be separated into pre-tax and Roth accounts. I would then start a Roth conversion of about $20,000 each year for the next 5 years. That would allow my Roth money to be the last money I ever touch, or even better, pass it on to my beneficiaries through my will. You won't even do it through your will, you just do it by contract. I would be careful to convert only what I can do without throwing myself into a higher tax bracket. What's your opinion on that? Well, you know what? I like this idea. But the issue, the only question I have, I do like the idea. I like the idea that we can take some of that money, roll it over, start converting it. Is there any issue of taking money out of the thrift savings plan that would preclude you from actually using the plan going forward? If that were the case, then I wouldn't be so quick to do it. But all things being equal, I like the plan. I like converting it. I like the way you're thinking. So to me, I think that's a good job. Good idea. Just make sure that you can still be able to contribute going forward. Okay? Thanks, Jeannie. Appreciate it. Okay, here's Peter, who's a big fan of the podcast, the Better Off Podcast. I have a question on how to approach my mother, who's having her money managed by what appears to be high-priced salespeople. I highly doubt they follow the fiduciary standard. The website has lots of red flags, investment seminars, no CFP designation or anything recognizable. It appears anyone can work for them. I've tried to speak to my mother about what a deal she's getting. I think they sold her A shares, so they salivated at her $750,000 account. What a payday. All the funds are expensive. They grossly underperform their benchmarks. You name the fee and they're charging her that fee. I was considering calling the company as a prospective client to gather intel, ask questions about the designations funds, blah, blah, blah. My take is the cat's out of the bag with fiduciary, whether or not it passes at this point. More people have been moving their funds to Vanguard. I would think that not only is she getting ripped off, but these funds are like comparing a Kodak camera to the worst phone camera out today. I would imagine people would be better off pulling their money out, especially after a market correction. Thanks again, Peter. Okay. So I happen to know the advisory firm that he's talking about. And what I want everyone to realize is that just because the person's charging you a sales commission doesn't in and of itself make it bad. But just because the person's and just because the person sold you a expensive mutual fund doesn't necessarily make it bad. But what makes it bad is the totality of this whole story. And my fear is that mom's not going to agree to moving the assets. However, presuming you can get her to agree, I think the best way to do it is to say to her, hey, mom, you know what we can save you every year on fees? Just like that. That would be good. Okay? So in my mind, if you can do that, get her going. Get out. Move on. Thanks for writing. You're listening to Jill on Money. 855-411-JILL is our phone number, our email address. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 855-411-JILL. You can send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Okay, this is a great question from a 24-year-old named Brittany who found the Better Off podcast and likes us. So she's just graduated from college and some money that's sitting around in her bank account, she wants to start investing it. I'm not sure whether to go all into the market or whether to be gutsy and timid. And I don't know, are ETFs good for the long term, passive investing? Don't know. Here's some info. So she's 24. She makes $57,000 a year. Her rent is $1,100 a month. By the way, she lives in Park Slope, Brooklyn, which I think is cheap rent for Park Slope. But she says she's looking for a cheaper place. She's barely breaking even. She says, I've got $12,500 chilling in a bank account. I've got $7,000 in a Roth IRA that's invested in Michael Kors stock. Thanks, Dad, for assuming I must want a fashion brand. I'm wondering what kind of investments I should be seeking. Where's a good place to get information and advice about stock choices? Forget about stocks. Okay, Brittany, let's keep this simple. Don't be messing with the money that's chilling in the bank account. The money that's in the Roth IRA, you should be investing in index funds. That's it. Really boring. You can do a stock index. You can do a bond index. You can just do maybe a very cheap Vanguard target date fund. That's easy. But you want to keep your costs down. But as you're, when young people are just starting out, I always have this magic three. And that is, make sure you have no debt. Make sure you've got 6 to 12 months of expenses in the bank. And make sure that you are maxing out your retirement account. So number one, I hope you're putting money away from that $57,000 a year income. If you've got a matching component, use it. Put new money into your Roth IRA every year. You can put $5,500. And as far as the investments, stick to low-cost index funds, low-cost index funds, and you should be fine. And if you just have the $7,000, you may want to even choose a low-cost target date fund. It'll look like Vanguard 2050 or something like that. Brittany, hop onto our website, jillonmoney.com. We've got tons of information there, and we'll help you out. Thanks for writing. And hey, thanks for listening. This is the end of the program. 855-411-JILL is our phone number. You can always send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.